I wore the same clothes tonight, so you would think I'm a rerun. I'm going to have to play that cow festival again on 56 one of these nights, so people will know what I was laughing at in that ad. I'm not a rerun. We're live tonight. This is the third night in a row, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I am determined for a few nights. We'll be going back to the teaching. That's what I want you to have from 10 to 11 every night, Monday through Friday. And the current teaching on Romans, you get on Sunday night. We replay normally the Sunday morning service during the 4 hours on Sunday nights. And I've been going live on Sunday night. But during this series, we've been playing, and we'll play it again. We're in the process of rerunning it. The 36 messages where I took an excursion in faith and Psalms to live by. I want to know if you appreciate it. Same message I came here last night for. We don't have to be on 56 every night if nobody appreciates it. I'm not in the business of entertaining. I'm not in the business of spending about $8,000 a day to just see my face on TV. I got every size, shape, every hair length, 28 years, 40, 50,000 hours. I've seen enough of myself on TV to make myself sick. I want to know if you appreciate the teaching. And the way I find out, I'm not going to tell you if you don't send money, we'll go off the air. I don't want anybody to send any money until I first teach you, and then you give as an expression of the value of the teaching. I have these many years been returning dignity to giving. God doesn't need our money. I don't need your money. But proper giving is worth-ship, contracted to the word worship. I don't want anybody supporting this ministry except those that have been taught and are giving as a response to the teaching. We don't have any projects. So what I'm after tonight is the regulars that make their reservations for Sunday. You can't come to the cathedral without a pass. You need to make the reservation by Wednesday noon so we can mail you the pass. But primarily, I want to know who listens between 10 and 11, Monday through Friday, on Channel 56, KDOC, and whatever cable channel you're watching, or DirecTV, or Dish Network, or whatever. I want to know if you appreciate the teaching that is being put out Monday through Friday. And those are the calls I want to receive, in addition to those making reservations. So will you get on the phone? We're showing you a tour of the Bible collection. When Mayor James Hahn and some of his staff came for a luncheon at the cathedral to see the Bible collection. It's one of the best-kept secrets in Los Angeles. I'm going to talk about some new additions to it tonight, as I did last night. But right now I'm taking your calls to express to me whether or not you appreciate the teaching that we're pouring out every night, 10 to 11, Monday through Friday, on Channel 56, KDOC, here in California. The rest of the world's listening. We're on every square inch of the globe. So you can call. You regulars that watch all across the country or listen on shortwave or tune in on the internet, get on the phone, talk to me. Come on. Well, I appreciate the way you're calling. Lots of messages. Now I'm going to shut the calls off. Finish whoever you're talking to. Don't be rude. Let me show you something. Last night, I brought in here the Aleppo Codex. Just got it. Been looking for it for years. I don't know if I got a cameraman facile enough to get behind me and go over my right shoulder. You've heard me talk a lot about the Masoretes from 300 to about the 11th century. Really from 600 to 900 was where the concentration was. the Hebrew text of the Bible was fixed. Maimonides, in the 13th century, put his stamp of approval on the Aleppo Codex, done in the 9th century. This takes us back to the 800s. And because of his stamp on it, it moved ahead of other codexes. And along with the Leningrad Codex, those two became the basis for the Hebrew Textus Receptus, as we would call it, the received text. You go to one of the seminaries in the area, buy a Hebrew Bible, to move out of the Latin, the Hebrew Stuttgart basic received text. By analogy, those of you who know Greek Bibles, the Nettle Allen New Testament Greek Bible is the received text, accepted as that which is based upon a wide base of manuscripts and the best example of the Greek text, the present time as it developed through the centuries. The text in the Bible of the New Testament was the Septuagint, the Old Testament translated into Greek in Egypt between 300 and 100 B.C. It became the Christian's Bible. So much so that there was a strong movement among the rabbis to bring forth a received Hebrew manuscript or text that would go behind, in their view, the Septuagint Greek translation, using all the sources they had to come up with the best Hebrew text. The Aleppo is considered the pattern. The Leningrad, a little more complete in some respects, almost rivals it. But I'm going to show you why these received texts became so complicated. The Masoretic text, let me get a darker print here if I can find one. Here's one. The Masoretic text contains the Hebrew. Three columns, reading from right to left, follow my hand. And if you can get in close enough, what the Masoretes did, and the word comes from two sources they debate, to bind, but most scholars accept it's to transfer or pass on. And there was two families in particular, the Ben Asher, five generations, and the Ben Naphtali, or Naphtali. The differences are small. The Ben Asher family became the core of the Masoretic transmission rather than translation. The proto-Masoretic, to go behind it, before, they almost worshipped the consonants. They counted the letters. The way they protected the exact reproduction down through the centuries, even though writing style would change. And by the way, these Hebrew block letters are borrowed from the Aramaic, which ruled the Mideast as the language universal from the 700 B.C. to 700 A.D. So, almost worshiping the consonants, the Masoretes added the vowel signs. If you can see close enough in the picture, you'll see little dots. You sometimes see me write the dots on. There's little dots and little T and dash underneath the letters. Now, there were three different streams of the Old Testament: the Babylonian, the Tiberian and the Jerusalem. And the Tiberian, through the Masoretes, won out. The other streams put the vowel signs sometimes above other places. It was the Masorite Tiberian stream of scholars that fixed the vowel signs underneath the letters. What makes this even more complicated, and this manuscript, 9th century, is like we have three of the oldest Greek Bibles in the world, and they debate Sinaiticus, Vaticanus, or Alexandrinus. The Alexandrinus influenced the Western translations more than the other two. Tischendorf, to his death, says the Sinaiticus is the best. The Vaticanus had the blessing of the Catholic Church. I'm with Tischendorf. Let me show you how complicated this is. They almost worshiped, they added the vowel signs, they almost worshiped the letters themselves. The Kabbalah goes even further, where every letter has a numerical meaning as well as the normal alphabetical meaning. What you see along here in the margins, what looks like little scribblies, you have to be able to read Aramaic. Stay on it. Those are additions, corrections, interpretations added by the scribes who did not want. In fact, they call these additions protections of the text. That in all the copying, they would never, ever, except for adding the vowel signs, never, ever change the consonants. They were sacred. They were numbered. If a scribe did a line and there was one letter less or one letter more, a mistake had been made. All the interpretations by the scholars through centuries reduced down in what's called, in the code word of the biblical scholars, MP, because it's on the sides of the margins, side margins, but they are not only in Aramaic, they're code words. Like in the Greek manuscripts, for example, they develop, the scribes, what's called nomina sacra. They develop a shorthand for Christ, to put it in an English form, a large X and a U, taking the first letter of Christ in the Greek and the last letter. And Jesus, same thing, they reduce it to two letters. And these oft-repeated words were reduced down to sacra nomina. It helps to date some of the Coptic scripture, for example, because they began to borrow from the Greek and use the sacred shorthand. And you've seen me when I wrote the Coptic on the board. God is the little Greek sign, because they borrowed the Greek capital letters, PHT, two letters. You know it's their word for God, Ephanut. Same way here, they had shorthand. You have to not only learn the Aramaic to be able to have this condensed commentary on the words or additions. This is like in the Greek New Testament, Nettel Island, they have the apparatus that tells you that, or in the Tischendorf Bible that I've provided you, a footnote that tells you the Sinaiticus says it a little different than the Vaticanus. That's in the margins. Then scholars ran out of space with that and began to do what is at the top and the bottom margins. Those were added. And so all through the manuscript, you have these codes along the side that interpret the Hebrew and Greek. It's not a commentary in the sense of preaching on it, but if there's an ambiguous word or there are other pieces of manuscripts that say something differently, that's all added there or up at the top and here. So you can see centuries. And each time they would copy as they moved through the centuries coming to this Aleppo Codex, there would be additions of this Aramaic corrective additions without ever affecting the original consonantal script. And then they begin to add top and bottom margins. Then they added what is in the code MF, which is at the end of every book, they begin to add final comments like how many letters were in the book, how many words were in the book, how many, every little detail is put at the final end. Only one of these in the world, and they're fighting over it. Nations fight over treasures like this. It was kept with a Sephardic Jewish group at Aleppo in Syria. In the riots in the early part of the 20th century, the place was destroyed by fire, and devout Jews rescued the manuscript, took it to Jerusalem. And there's an entire Hebrew Bible study organization that I read about last night that has dedicated itself to maintaining that treasure and producing, finally, these rare copies that are selectively available. We have one now for the first time, which I'll be putting on display down at the cathedral, along with the many others. But this particular manuscript, along with the Leningrad, represent, 11th century now, the two major foundation Hebrew manuscripts from which the accepted, not Christian, Hebrew Bible is formed and is printed in more modern available versions such as Biblia Hebraica Leningradensa, and that is strictly this manuscript made available for scholars in a cheaper form. But the two, the Aleppo and the Leningrad, become in code BHS, which is the accepted Hebrew Bible. And you'll see in this one also, you'll see, come back with the camera, you'll see the two separate manuscripts, but you'll see along the sides the Aramaic codes that interpret, as I just explained, and across the top the further elaborations and comments, some of which come from the Targums. And this one has some of the following final stuff in great style, which I want to show you a picture or two of, and get to it quickly. Here we go. These are the complicated interpretive principles that the Masoretic scholars have to understand and follow, which guides their study. It's small wonder that you find a Hebrew scholar that spent 20 years with a master, like Paul studied at the feet of Gamaliel. You don't go and take SAT tests and go through undergraduate programs and then choose a major. You find a man who's given his life to God's Word, and you sit at his feet, and the man at whose feet you sit can explain things like this. Look at it. Come on, zoom in. That's not a stained glass window. This is all Hebrew around here. Aids to memorization. Look at this one. And you think, when I write in Ethiopic and Coptic and Syriac, that you're having to concentrate a little bit. I have great respect for these Hebrew scholars that preserved the Old Testament in such a wonderful way. I have also, as we look at the roots of the Old Testament, I have here, not on display yet, can't do it, provided to me from my own personal research, the Samaritan Pentateuch from the University Library at Cambridge, year 1213. Look, get a camera on it. Looks like something you do at Kinko's. But by special permission, it's been provided to me from Cambridge University Library for my personal study. And the importance of this, which I'll mention in the next half hour, is the deviations of the Samaritan Pentateuch, which the Samaritans in northern Israel restrict their Bible to just the Pentateuch. And there are thousands of deviation in the first five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the Pentateuch, deviations from the Masoretic, which was put together between 300 and 1000 A.D. The Samaritan Pentateuch has thousands of deviations from the accepted Masoretic Hebrew text. And what's really interesting is that thousands within those thousands of deviations from the Hebrew text are the same as the Septuagint Greek translation, which deviates from the Masoretic text. You understand what I just said to you? The Masoretes wanted, not beginning with them, as the Christians in essence took over the Septuagint and used the Jewish Bible to prove Christ was Messiah, they began to develop a Bible that they would say is behind the Septuagint, the Hebrew from which the Septuagint was translated. But there are thousands of deviations in the Masoretic accepted Hebrew text from the Septuagint translated. And the Septuagint deviations, in the numbers and thousands, match the phrases and words in the Samaritan Pentateuch, which suggests that the Samaritan Pentateuch, done before the Masoretic, and the Septuagint, translation to Greek, done before the Masoretic, had access to Hebrew manuscripts much older. And thus, just maybe, more accurate. I'll come to that in the next half hour, but I want you to call. I'm here primarily to find out if you appreciate the time. This, I can't put this on display yet. I'm seeking permission, as I explain, that it's not a public service and you must get a pass to get in. And they will tell me how to give them credit when I can put this Samaritan Pentateuch on display along with these other foundation documents for the Hebrew Bible as we continue to expand this astounding collection of the history of the Bible that's on display at the cathedral. Now, I want you to call me for the next few minutes. Get on the phone. All right, here's Glenn Doerr saying, "This is astounding. I'm so glad you're on the air, and I look forward to more." And here from Culver City, Dr. Scott, I want to say how much I appreciate seeing you on Channel 56. I get home from work, and I'm able to turn on 56 and listen to you. As soon as my schedule gets straightened out, I want to come to the cathedral. Northridge, I'm so delighted with Dr. Scott's teaching. It's my second time watching, and I'll continue to. First-time caller from Santa Monica, really enjoys the programming. That's what I want to hear. I want to know that the teaching is being received and helpful. No teacher just wants to rattle off. If you're a true teacher, you want the eyes to see the light. If I were in university teaching, as I was trained to do, I'd be giving you midterms and finals. Can't do that. Wish I could. Wish I could just sort of rivet you there and make you write an answer to test questions. But I'll be satisfied. Just get on the phone and say, keep doing it. I watch, and I'm glad you're on every night from 10 to 11 on 56. That's why I'm here live tonight. We'll be returning to the teaching every night, but this is midterms. I want to find out whether or not you are receiving something from the teaching. Get on the phone. You can see as we are leading Mayor James Hahn to the various stations, we have 50-some stations of the book that trace the history of the Bible to the current English versions. Now, I showed you in these, and don't take any more calls, finish the calls you're on, but I want to go a little further. I showed you the complications. These are not just manuscripts I put on display. When I'm breaking the verses down as I teach you, some of you have seen that yellow bag that I carry in when I'm going to the platform. I have photographs made of the passages in all these manuscripts, so I can carry them around, break them apart. I don't just put them on display. I send somebody down to take them out, or already have done it, and have my photographic copies. Like last night, I work from a photocopy I made. I'm not violating anybody's copyrights. These are old enough to be yet. For example, the only manuscripts in some of these libraries, you can't use them and copy them. They have to give you permission to put them on display. But for my own research, I can make a copy and carry the pages around with me. And as I told you the Sunday that Denis played the harmonica, I'd go over and work at a table that they provided for me, and there's a waiter there that speaks Arabic up in San Francisco. There's an Ethiopic waiter, and I have fun challenging their modern interpretation. For example, the word righteousness, adlu, in the Arabic, when I wrote the verse down on a piece of paper and said to the young man who speaks modern Arabic, Adlu Allaha, what is that saying? He says, the fairness of God, because the word meant fairness in the modern frame. We're coming to a verse very shortly in Romans, translated redemption in the King James, and you may think you know what that means. But when you go sideways through all these languages and the oldest manuscripts, I use them. And when we were in Psalms, I used the Aramaic a lot. I had fun with my friends at the Ancient Manuscript Center sending them an Aramaic passage that I had written out and not telling them where it was so they couldn't check any reference anywhere. And having them translate it and feed it back to me to see. And I have fun with the Arabic guy doing that. And he made a comment as he's watched me do this and tear every word apart. And as is often the case, they may know the vocabulary and the fluency and the ear to hear, but many times I find I know the grammar better than they do, like a lot of people who learn English but don't know the grammar. But he made a comment. He said, you know, he'd watched me for weeks, if you were doing cancer research, the way you research these words and letters and manuscripts, we'd already have a cure for cancer. Now, I didn't say it. Yeah, wait a minute. The punchline's coming. I didn't say it, but I wanted to say what I'm doing is more important than finding a cure for cancer. But there are lots of backup matters in my library. Sometimes I think I needed a 14-story tower to just store all my books in one place. But the Masoret, for example, this little book gives you, if you can't read the Aramaic, and even if you can, the shorthand is a special skill. This little book is dedicated to interpreting all of, among other things, all of those Aramaic shorthand markings in the margins. So it's like those preachers who use the lexicon for Greek and Hebrew. If I can't figure it out myself, I can take this little book, and it's got a complete alphabetical Aramaic shorthand code explanations. It's amazing the amount of scholarship that has gone into producing the Bible that we just take for granted today when we pick up a Gideon Bible in a hotel desk drawer. Let me show you something else. Let me read you something out of this book. Can I do that? Like old times, we used to do this all the time, remember? This is Introduction to the Old Testament by Roland Kenneth Harrison. I had a preacher order some tapes and send a letter. We didn't get the order, saying, you got to send them to me. I'm in a time pattern, and it's pretty apparent what he wanted. He needed these tapes because he's got to have them to get his message ready. And if the order got misplaced, he don't know where to go with his next message. I'm going to start selling tapes to preachers that do what these libraries do to me. They'll give me permission to quote, but plagiarism is a crime, and it's a tragedy that so much in the Christian world, we have so many preachers that don't have the ethics of an agnostic, atheistic professor in a university. And I'm going to send what they send. Okay, you can have it for your private research, but you can't put it on display. And if you put it on display, you have to write a letter and tell us how you're going to use it and how it's going to be displayed, and we will tell you how to give us credit. Now, when preachers start ordering tapes from me, I mean, I had a person, I told you the other day, say, well, there's a pastor in Dallas that records you every Sunday and then studies it all week long and condenses it down for his sermon the following Sunday. What's a crime? That is simply stealing. Well, it all comes from God and He owns it. Well, then give me your bank account, because my Bible says the earth is the Lord and everything that's in it. Get off of that. But I want to talk to you about the Samaritan. I think you'll find this... Ready? Am I boring you?
Yes, sir.
I don't mind giving credit. Roland Kenneth Harrison, Introduction to the Old Testament. I didn't learn that kind of ethic in Bible school. I learned it at Stanford. They threw people out for taking credit for intellectual product as though it was their own. Oh, but these very same self-righteous preachers will not name me as a source because they condemn me for smoking a cigar. There ain't nothing in God's Word that says don't smoke cigars. Don't talk to me about the health risk until you tell me you quit eating sugar and quit going around looking like a whale. And vegetate all day long. Get on a bike with me. So they don't want to say what the source is because I smoke cigars. There's nothing in the Bible about it. Now, this is my freedom stick. I smoke it exactly to tell all of you, you don't have to stop living to be a Christian, and you don't have to become an idiot to be a Christian. You don't have to park your brain at the church to be a Christian. Thought I'd throw that in. But the Samaritan Bible that I just said is one with the Septuagint. Let me tell you about these Samaritans. Hold on. Just before I came in here, on the network we were playing teaching 21 years ago on the Lost Tribes. The Northern Kingdom, alternately called Israel, Samaria, and House of Israel. The Northern Kingdom, in contrast to the Southern Kingdom, named after the prominent tribe Judah, most of them were picked up centuries before Jerusalem fell and the Jews were carried into Babylon, the Southern Kingdom. The Assyrian king picked them up and moved them wholesale and settled them south of the Caspian Sea in Lake Van as a buffer state between the Medes, northern Persia, northern Iran, and transplanted into the northern kingdom area foreigners. And then they sent teachers, Jewish teachers, or Israel teachers, Hebrew teachers is the word I'm looking for, back to establish an imitation of the southern kingdom's worship in Jerusalem. These teachers had access to manuscripts and produced the Torah, called the Samaritan Pentateuch. That's one story. The other one is that when Joshua led them into the Promised Land, he stopped at the area now called Nablus in northern Israel, between Mounts Gerizim and Ebal, mounts of blessing and cursing, to interpret the words, and built an altar at Mount Ebal. And there were those of the northern tribes settled in the area that when Shiloh became the place where they put the tabernacle, resisted it and felt that the true place of the holy city should be where the altar was built by Joshua on Mount Ebal between Gerizim and Ebal, that area around Nablus today. The same thing happened in the southern kingdom. The reason Absalom could rally Judah against David is that the hard heads of Judah resented the fact that David put the capital in the United Kingdom in Jerusalem, which was part of the territory of Benjamin. And they felt that the holy place should remain in the south at Hebron, where Abraham's family were buried. And they fought against the move of the spiritual capital from Hebron to Jerusalem. And their resentment was so deep, they were ripe to revolt with Absalom against David. Same thing in the north. A body, hard heads in the northern kingdom, resented the tabernacle being at Shiloh when they thought it should be at Ebal, where Joshua had built the altar. And they certainly resented Jerusalem being the center when the kingdoms unite, because they felt it should be at Ebal, between Gerizim and Ebal. Those people then protected the Pentateuch, and they were still, some of them, there to teach when the strangers were moved in by the Assyrian king. Those two sources of story are the background of the Samaritan Pentateuch. In addition to Qumran scrolls and fragments of great importance to Bible history is the Samaritan Pentateuch. The Samaritans were regarded by the Jews as the descendants of Mesopotamian expatriates whom Sargon had settled in and around Samaria after the collapse of the northern kingdom in 722 B.C., 2 Kings 17. Other colonists were subsequently introduced to the community by Esarhaddon and Ashurbanipal, another Assyrian king. Whatever knowledge of Judaism they possessed was dismissed by the Jews as being rather coincidental and certainly superficial. And in consequence, they were regarded as being, at best, only one degree removed from the Gentiles. The Samaritans themselves held quite a different theory of their origins, tracing their descent from the Israelites who had remained loyal to God when the Ark of the Covenant was deposited with the tabernacle at the rival shrine of Shiloh, Judges 18, instead of being placed on Mount Gerizim, where they claimed was its true location, opposite where the altar was built on Ebal, between those two. The infamy of constructing a second temple on an incorrect site was perpetrated by Ezra in their mind, who in the Samaritan view falsified the sacred text and thereby persuaded the returning exiles to erect the second temple in Judea. And Ezra is the one who started the canonization of the Old Testament and the split off of the Samaritans. They protected with equal rigidity, as these manuscripts I have shown you, whatever copy of the Pentateuch they had in those ancient days dating back before Ezra. So in the Samaritan Pentateuch, for the first five books of the Old Testament, which are crucial, we have the Samaritan Pentateuch protected with equal zealousy as the Masoretes put together the Hebrew text, which now dominates the Hebrew Bible world around. The Samaritan Pentateuch has different passages and words than those of the Hebrew Bible, Masoretic, and yet same phrases as the Septuagint Greek translation of the Old Testament done between 300 and 100 B.C. And one opinion, the same way I spread all the languages that are available in ancient texts as I take it verse by verse through Romans, if I find Matthew quoting an Old Testament, the Septuagint version he had, and the Septuagint text itself that we have, and the Samaritan Pentateuch, and those three say a virgin shall conceive, and the Masoretic says a young woman shall conceive. Three against one, and two of them more ancient than the Masoretic text, I know which way I'm going to go. That's why, for much of my life, I've been assembling these manuscripts as I got my faith back from a hard study of the resurrection. And though I was trained in philosophies of education at Stanford and in a cross-departmental degree of broad humanities, religion, philosophy, and education, my life is dedicated to unpacking this word, and I've assembled the manuscripts until when I stand before you, I don't have to tell you what to do, and I'm not telling you to believe what I believe. I'm going to lay it out until you can decide where the words are ambiguous, which has the majority view of men closer to the time of its saying, who had the same dedication I have. I want to just pass on to you what Paul said, or whatever the verse, as we dig through the manuscripts. And I don't have to say the Greek says this because somebody said the Greek says this. I got the manuscripts. I hope one of these days you that haven't will come and view the greatest accumulation of Bible manuscripts ever in private hands. Most people would lock them away in vaults and keep them for investment. We put them on display for you to see at the church, which is I preach Sunday, that has the purpose that Paul told Timothy the church has as its purpose, the church of the living God, which is the pillar and ground, elevating the truth. That's why this church exists. That's why I exist, to proclaim as best I can, dig it out, what the word says, and you do what you want with it. I'm going to do what I can with it. But I'm not cramming it down your throat or trying to convert you. I just want to set before you the evidence so you can see this as best manuscripts can show forth is what was said. Now, if you appreciate the teaching, as I said an hour ago or almost, get on the phone and tell me. When we go off Channel 56, these Voices of Faith will be here, the phones will still be on, the number's going on the screen, and has been there. I want you to call and tell me if you appreciate the time on 56.